Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Hello.
It's good to be with you.
Sorry, like
we're just having an argument over the various Jameses in the New Testament. Don't mind us.
Yeah, it's over now,
as opposed to the King James. That's a whole different king.
So here's what we got going on the show tonight. So we have a new thing on the show called Not Quite Pope Style. Because Booba has something he's testing out that he's not quite ready to deliver to the masses.
Nope.
But maybe something for him personally that he just wants to bloviate for a bit on something.
It's just kind of like independent Protestant style advice.
It's not quite ready for the papal wisdom, the book of wisdom, but.
Booba's Reformatory, Chapter 1. He's going to share some of that kind of stuff. I've got something I've been thinking about, something that I've been mulling over my mind. It has a relation to Martin Luther King Day, combination to kind of persecution of the church and action of the church body. And anyway, I'll share that with you, and maybe I'll get your guys' thoughts, like see what your reaction is, because it's just something that's been... just been kind of mulling around in my mind. Also, the long-awaited return of Secular versus Solomon.
Yeah.
This is your internet's favorite home game, of which I give you a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether it is a secular bit of wisdom or it is a biblical bit of wisdom or what we'll call Solomon. And if it is a secular bit of wisdom, I need the country that is... country... One more time. Country of origin, boys.
Did you say country?
I don't want to hear no... it's coming from Utah, or it's probably from... some sort of country that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, man. Ancient civilization.
But that
count.
Is the country of origin.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Mesopotamia. Come on.
There are no Persian bits of wisdom in this week's entries.
All right. Thanks for the clue.
No groups of people. No, I think it came from a Jew. No, that's not going to work. All right. Let's do countries of origin.
Samaritan.
Now, here's the deal. Every time I say that, I look and there pops up. There's some sort of people group in here that I'm going to have to repent of. But that's where we're going to start. So. Also, Mike, we get some advice on Dear Life from the Path. Anything?
Yeah, we're gonna have to spin the wheel on these boys. There's a couple who has excessive drinking problems, grandparents who are shocked over their kindergartner's use of makeup, and three cats becoming too crowded in a one bedroom apartment. I mean, any of these are viable.
Oh, yeah. Oh man,
these seem completely legit.
Yeah. These are all big deals.
Okay. Anyway, that's what we got going on. Let's fire up Booba. So what's going on, Booba? What is not quite ready for prime time, Pope?
Man, so God's kind of showing me some stuff recently, kind of shaking my faith a little bit and saying, calling me out, saying that I'm kind of a pansy and that I'm missing on some stuff.
Well, good. I've been passing that on to him. I'm glad he's come around.
Yeah,
we're in agreement.
He finally relayed the message of, hey, Boova, you're a pansy. You got some stuff to work on.
Okay.
And so I've been talking to some of my spiritual leaders recently about my prayer life and some difficulty in it. Of trying to figure out exactly, you know, how to pray and how to listen for God's voice and how to get answers from God, right? So there's some stuff going on in my life right now that I could really use hey, Booba, it's a go. Like, I could really use one of those, or a Booba, it's a definite no kind of deal.
Yep.
And I feel like God and I have never really worked on that level, if you will. I've never been one of those people that like hear an answer specifically from God. Like if I find an answer, it's normally from, you know, someone else that's heard something or knows something.
Yep.
Or, I find an answer in the Bible and I find answer from inspiration from a story or something like that. Right. I've never really been one of those, hey, Booba, here's the situation. By the way, this is God. I'm going to tell you exactly how it is.
I've got your baggage. Come follow me.
Right.
I'm with you.
Exactly. Right. Okay. And so, I've been kind of getting some guidance on how to deal with that and how to take care of that and how to grow into that spiritual level with the Holy Spirit that I'm looking for, that I can get, you know, true guidance from the helper that the Holy Spirit is supposed to be for us, right? And so someone kind of challenged me to start praying specifically for things. And I said, no, I already do that. That's no problem. They go, no. You need to pray like very specifically for things. You know, give God a pathway, obviously, but like you know, you want an answer to something, ask him a specific question rather than, you know, saying, hey, God, you know, I really want you to work in my life and I want you to show me something I'm supposed to be doing. You know, ask a specific question of God. Am I supposed to be doing this or am I not? I need a sign. I need an answer. And so me being the pansy that I've admitted to be, I tried this out on something really small and God completely blew my entire face away. Like it was one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me in my entire life. So yesterday I get home from church, and I'm well. So I got home, took a nap, took a shower, got up, took medicine, and then I'm ready to get out again. Right?
Do anything else?
Some other stuff like scratch sandwich. I think
scratched my butt.
Yeah.
Looked out the window for a bit.
I gave myself the foot rub real quick. It was good stuff.
It's a compelling story.
Yeah, it's great. And so I go out to get in my car, and I try to start my car, and my car is completely dead. It will not start. And so right now I'm kind of in a weird car situation where I'm kind of stuck in between a couple vehicles for different reasons and problems with a couple vehicles. So I get in to the car that I'm trying to drive to Altoona to go to the group I'm trying to go to, and I try to start the car. Nothing happens. The lights turn on, but it doesn't even click over at all. Pull my key out, put it back in, try and start it, does not even click over at all. Like, nothing is happening in this car. It is dead, and the starter's not even kicking in. So I decide, okay, I'm not going to test God, but I'm going to see what God wants to do with this. You know, I'm supposed to be praying for something specific. I'm supposed to give a very specific situation. I may have done this wrong, but God still showed up pretty cool. So I take the key out of the ignition. I set it on the seat next to me. I said, all right, God, we got a couple options here. I'm either going to be in this vehicle, it's going to start, and I'm going to drive to Altoona, and I don't have to worry about being out in the dark without lights, for the most part, or without lights in the back, at least. Or this car is not going to start. I'm going to hop in the car next to me. It's going to start, but I'll be in a situation where I don't have lights when it's dark out. So that's going to be a problem. So I said, so God, if you want me to drive this vehicle, and I thought to myself, do something really specific. I said, if you want me to drive this vehicle is not going to start the first time I try and turn that key. It is also not going to start the second time I try and turn that key. But it is going to start on the third time I turn this key. The ignition will start. If you want this car to start, it's going to. And so, put the key in the ignition, turn it, absolutely nothing. Take the key back out, set the keys back down on the seat next to me, and I said, all right, God, like I said, I'm not testing you in this situation. I'm asking for a specific answer. I want to ask in faith that if you want this vehicle to start, I'm going to put that key in. It is not going to work, but I'm going to put it in one more time. On the third try, this is going to start. So I put it in. Turn it over, nothing happens. It's not even starting. No sound is happening. It's not even clicking for the starter. So I take the key out one more time. I set it in the seat next to me, and I said, all right, God, this is it. When I put this key back in, I turn this car over, it is going to start. No problems. I'm going to drive out of here. That is my sign on how this car is going to start and that I'm supposed to use this car. Or I'm going to get in the car next to me. And so I said, I believe in this. I have faith in this. This is a small and stupid and minuscule thing for you. You know, this is the God that I know of that did the pillar of fire and then the cloud and like part of the seas. Like, you've done some seriously sweet stuff in stories, God. I need something small. If you want this to work, it's going to work. So I put the key in the ignition. I turn it over. The car starts with no issues whatsoever. And so I started screaming at the top of my lungs and freaking out to where I probably freaked out my neighbors because I am like a big man shaking my vehicle and screaming at the top of my lungs. And I don't know if I said hallelujah or whatever, but like I was screaming some praises and I was very excited.
They probably thought your Justin Bieber jam came on.
Right, exactly. I'm like, yes, praise the Lord. Jay Biebs is on. I'm excited. But the car started up with no issues. Like it didn't even putter at all. It just starts right on up. Mm-hmm. So I started freaking out and it hit me because I'm just like, you know, even if that was a weird coincidence that I did something different the third time, it doesn't matter. Like that to me in my heart was God completely showing up and showing me, dude, you just got to trust me on stuff. You got to realize that if I'm going to show up for something small like this, like starting a car, you don't realize how much more of an answer I want to give you when you're trying to pursue me and pursue my heart. You just got to be patient and listen for my answers. And so, you know, since that happened, I've been even more intently trying to pray and specifically ask questions and actually sit there and listen for an answer, which is the first time I've ever done that. You know, I've never sat down and actually sat back and just, I put headphones on and didn't have any music playing. I just wanted it to be quiet and sit there. And I had a notepad in front of me because I wanted to write down whatever came to my head, but just listen to what God has to say to me. And it's been so cool even trying to get that close of a relationship with God to get answers. Like, I haven't been successful yet, but I think it's me, it's not him. So just pushing myself to the place where I want to be you know, in tune with God more than I ever have been, and have a relationship that I've always wanted and I've always heard about, but I've never experienced myself. It's just been, it's been really cool to see what God has to do. And just yesterday with that car starting, it was so cool, and it was honestly something that just, it reaffirmed my faith in such a crazy way. It was such a small thing, and I've just been praising him ever since. Like, I turned on the car, and I turned on a local Christian radio station, and I just praised him the whole way to Altoona, just screaming and jumping and singing and dancing in my car, and constantly in prayer. And it's just been a really cool thing, and I know that it's a long journey that I'm going to be on trying to get this closeness to God, and I know that I'm going to screw up quite a few things. I know that, but it's just been, it's been a really cool experience just within the last couple of days of necessity breaking into my mind and my life and trying to fix a couple things, and you know, God seems to be moving quite a bit. So it's not quite Pope style yet to where I feel like I'm in a place where I can tell more people on how to do this, but it's definitely something that I'm trying to work on and build in my relationship with God and starting to get better at that. So not quite Pope style with Booba.
So have any of their guys experienced something similar to what he's talking about? I mean, that doesn't have to be the car thing.
Yeah, all the time. I just can't think of any one particular thing at the, off the top of my head, but yeah.
See, that's what it seems like. I tell people that story, they're like, yeah, man, that happens. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, it was the craziest thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. So I look forward to the day that I get to go, hey, man, yeah, God started a car for you. He'll do a lot more. So yeah.
I think sometimes God just kind of toys with me like a little cat, a little toy, and he kind of dangles things in front of me just to mess with my mind.
Mess with Dan.
Watch this. Hey, Peter. Hey, James the Great.
You know, I've had, we've had a couple instances on the show, to be honest with you, where something like this has come up. And I'm always hesitant to be like, yeah, God stepped in. I don't want to, it's a weird deal. Like, I don't know why this feels so weird, but I want to credit God with something petty that he did not do.
Right.
Although he very well could have done it. But we've had a couple times. In fact, it's distinctly happened twice. We were getting ready to start the show, and like YouTube was down. Like the service, the whole thing is not working. And so we couldn't broadcast the show. And, you know, we troubleshoot and we try to reconnect things and restart some stuff. And then, and then all of a sudden, like, I'll just pray on it. Say, look, God, you got, I mean, it's your YouTube. So, I mean, you want to fire this thing up. That sounds good. And then next click, we're up and running. No problems for the rest of the night. Certainly could be circumstantial, right? I don't need I think the prospect is it doesn't really matter to me. But, like, that's happened twice where we've tried a bunch of other stuff, pray on something, bam, next click, everything's good to go. No troubles here. So Buvo, how does that change? How does that change going forward then? So, like, what is it that you've, how does that realization impact your relationship or basically how you interact with God from where you're at today?
Well, I think that to speak on what you said before you asked a question, I think that's one of the reasons why I asked for it to be the third time, because I thought to myself, if I just start this car and it's going to work, then that's definitely a coincidental thing. But, like, if I know it's not going to start the first time and it's not going to start the second time, but I'm praying for it to start the third time, and it did start the third time, that kind of made it solid in my mind of, wait, that, there's no way that was a coincidence. That was totally me asking specifically for something and asking God if he wanted it to happen, for it to happen. Now, I'm not saying you can't call it a coincidence, whatever. That's just where my brain was at the time. But going forward with that, I think that I needed to see something small, because I got some advice recently to try and do a prayer journal. Which I've never done before in my entire life. I've never written anything down. And when I talk to people about, you know, how I hadn't received answers from God in any way, shape, or form, I kind of stated that the only time I'd ever had received answers, it wasn't from God directly. It was from people, and it was from reading my Bible. They said, well, maybe words is your thing. Like, you have to see something for it to be what you think you hear from God. So maybe you should start writing down what you're thinking while you're praying and even writing down your prayers. And so I've been doing that, and I wrote down some kind of scary stuff that, like, I never said, but I was thinking at the time, and so I had to write it down for me to even look at it. It was some faith stuff where I just realized that I may not be trusting God at all with big things in my life. And, like, really big things in my life that I've struggled with for a long time, I'm just not trusting God on. And I've never said that in a prayer, but it popped in my head and I started writing it down. And after reading back on it, I'm just like, wow, that's a scary thing that I have absolutely no trust. And like, you know, I won't go into the specifics of it, but, you know, one situation where I just blatantly said and wrote down that I do not trust that God is strong enough to handle it. I don't. I have no trust in God in this. And that is a scary thing that I've never said aloud. And it's never something that I've thought before, but apparently it's something that was in my brain at the time. And so I wrote it down. And I've been praying back and reflecting on that the last couple of days because I wrote it on like Saturday and it was a scary thing to hit me. And so, you know, being more intentional about little things, God completely showing up yesterday and something so minuscule as a car starting when I had a car that I could have very easily started up next to it. You know, it wasn't a consequential thing, but it was something that was big enough for me that, you know, I think that's a start that I kind of looked at it and I thought to myself, you know, maybe I'm not trusting God in this and I don't have a reason to not trust in him for this.
Right.
You know, there's no reason for me to think that there's anything too big for God. However, for some reason, maybe I do think that. And I had never, in my eyes, seen God show up like that in something like that. And when I saw God show up in something small, and I'm asking him to show up in something big, you know, if he loves me, of course he's going to show up in the big thing. Like, why wouldn't he? If he's willing to show up in something so stupid and small as starting a car, why wouldn't he, loving me as his son, show up in this enormous thing that I've been dealing with for years and this battle that I've been having for years? And so seeing that small thing happen and that specific prayer that I asked for, you know, I asked for him to show up, and he completely did. It really started to reaffirm that trust that apparently I had lost, and I didn't realize that I had lost. And so I think that it was the first step that God wanted to show me in reaffirming that trust in him, and ultimately maybe reestablishing a faith that I might have lost in this specific situation, which that kills me that I didn't have faith,
right.
And I want to fix that. And if that's a big thing, you know, between God and I in a relationship, that's something I have to fix.
So, Herrick, we'd actually been talking a little bit through the prayers of Daniel just prior to the show. Is there any wisdom or example in Daniel that you feel like speaks to or informs Boova's circumstances?
Wow, I feel like he hit on a lot of the topics that we talked about in our study. Just hearing back from God, issues of faith. There was a lot about journaling, and I mean, just consider the fact that we've got prayers from Daniel. We actually have them in our Bibles. They're written out, and that's because someone sat down and they recorded them. Especially in chapter 2, just the timing of it is pretty astonishing when you consider he's under a death warrant, and there are people who are potentially being executed while he stops and says, okay, I need to praise you, God, right now, and even record it down, write it down. And, you know, writing's not a real easy thing in their day and in their culture. And he says, no, I got to do this, even though people might be getting killed right about now. And just considering I don't know. Wow. We were giving ourselves a lot of astonished looks around the room just because so much of what you're learning is so very in sync with what we were learning in Daniel. And as we've been just seeing Daniel's life as a model of here's a guy who prayer was very essential to who he is and how he relates to God and how it just reveals so much of what he thinks of God and how he sees God. And so much of Daniel's faith is expressed in this prayer, not just in the way that he prays, but also in the words that he uses, in the role and the position that he takes with God. Some of these things are just described, and they're very obvious in the way that he prays. And you can see this in the way that other people pray, not that you should judge their prayers, but that you should look at prayers and see, all right, how is this person relating to God? What is it that their prayer reveals about God, at the very least in their own mind? But we can learn about God from each other, from the way that we pray as a community, just by listening to other people's prayers and just like the kind of expectations in terms of roles that people have of how God is provider and how God is loving and how he will forgive us, that those are revealed in the way that, that we pray, and certainly in Daniel as well. It's a very much a two-way conversation. It's not just, hey, he launches up a prayer. There were some really cool times in which he prayed and just kind of kept on going for another 3 weeks. And then an angel shows up and he says, hey, by the way, it was on day one of your prayer that a message was sent out. And I was sent to you, but I was delayed because of other spiritual realities involved in the situation. So it's not just, you know, something so simple as, hey, here it is unlocked. But ultimately, it's still all coming from God, even though there might be other spiritual complications involved in it. And I love that in the middle of you just kind of talking through this situation, half the time you're just praising God for what he's done for generations before you, and half the time you're praising God for what he's done with you. And you're just kind of relaying the situation of, hey, here's what I saw. Here's what I witnessed, and in no way was it about you. It was very much a God story. And you know, that reminds me of how Daniel does it as well. It's kind of surprising just how much of what you're encountering and unpacking is exactly what Daniel was encountering and unpacking and learning about. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. All right, then. Mike, you ever try to get Jesus to start your car?
No.
Why not?
I'm not sure why. I feel like I should do it more often.
I don't know why, but I feel like, how could people react negatively to this? Why was it that I think there's someone's like, yeah, I don't know if Jesus starts your car.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Yeah, so why?
Well, actually, I was thinking about it while he was talking, because like my gut instinct is like, this is what people pay me to do, right? I troubleshoot why something didn't work. That's what I do. And so you say, my car didn't start, and I think, well, it's probably these top three things or whatever it is, you know? And it occurred to me that even if that was true, even if it was right, like, all I'm trying to do is explain what caused the problem, not what brought on the solution, right? It's very hard to explain erratic things like that, like it didn't work, then it worked. You know, you're like, well, your ignition switch is glitchy or something, you know? But here's the thing, it didn't have to work on the third try. It didn't have to work when Buva asked God for it to work. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, that's a very tough line for me to toe, and I feel like I came out on the right side of it after he was done talking, but like that is my gut reaction is, I don't know, man. I feel like I could probably figure out what the deal was. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Although, you know what? Like, even the posture of thinking through, well, yeah, maybe you just think it's a coincidence, right? But that actually pulls God out of something that he's not necessarily out of. Right. If I say, "What is coincidence?" But God doing what He pleases.
Actually, so that was where I think the leap gets hard to buy on some occasions. Is sometimes we leave the mystery because we feel like if the facts were relayed, then God would then it wouldn't look like God did it.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes, so like Boova's example is harder for me because I generally troubleshoot car problems, right? And so I think, well, I'd probably gotten to the bottom of that thing and figure out what the deal is. Maybe Boova's mystery is not the Lord's hand, but merely just a mystery to Buva. But then I turn around and I look at some things in my own life of where I see things like that happen on things that I don't understand very well, and I've seen the Lord do some stuff, you know? And I think, am I just being lazy and not proving that the Lord has done something here? Or is the faith part just accepting that, yeah, he has. He has done something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so what you're saying is that, this kind of matches up to part of what we were talking about during the Daniel study too, which was our discomfort with mystery. Our discomfort in the thought process that God might act in a way that either we don't understand or the absence or fear of questions, asking God questions for fear of the answer or lack of an answer, or our desire, constant desire for nailing down specific theology, because we simply can't be comfortable with a gray that says both of these things are true, and we are not quite sure how they go together,
right? To the extent that, that God may be, the fullness of his character may represent two different things. And so we make some, I was thinking throughout, I guess I can't come up with a perfect example at the moment, but like I remember earlier in the week, I was thinking through specific theological things and like, why does someone believe that? And
like snake handling.
Yeah, baby. well, that's just bad text. Well, but in either case, so maybe it's what happens to babies, or you know, like just all these types of things where we nail some things down. We have to say, I believe this thing so that I can be confident in this thing, right? And we need to nail those down because we simply can't. We're not comfortable in a gray. We're not comfortable in a mystery that says God will do this right even if I don't understand it completely. And God can be both of these attributes or all three of these attributes combined. And even if I don't understand it, I know that it is right and good because it is God. And so we are constantly chasing things to dilute wonder and to dilute gray because we want to deal with black and white. But the truth is, to the extent that we believe we can nail God down in that manner, we are false in the assumption. Like, if I feel like I can go through and nail my theology down and say, I know all of these things to be precisely true, I understand God in this way, like, it's just a false premise to act on to think that we can even know God in that manner, that he is capable of being known to the extent that our facts, our logic, our whatever will work out so that we can know him completely. Like, that's false. It's a false assumption. And so, I just wonder how often, like, we see things go on and we need it to fit into a box that God is simply not prepared to fit in. And so then we have to reject it, and we have to say, well, because in Buva's example, maybe God does. Maybe God starts the car, okay?
Yeah.
But then I hear someone else say, well, I asked God to send me a wife, and it ends up sending him, someone he ends up divorcing, or it's a prostitute. I don't know. It's somebody where you're like, there's no way God sent you that woman. Like, this doesn't sound right at all. And so we're like, well, because I can't believe that God sent a prostitute to you, then God never starts cars either. Because there's too much risk in there. There's too much risk to say that God did this because someone missed it and said that God did something that he didn't do. We simply can't deal with the risk that's involved there, so we say God does not act in this way.
I think so. I think some of that's kind of hard because, like, a lot of people have a hard time. We'll say the people outside the faith, right? Like, they have a hard time believing that God actually does miracles. And some of it is because we attribute absolutely everything to God, and then they find us disingenuous. So, like, for example, I had a toothache, I took some aspirin, and I thanked Jesus that my toothache went away. And what they'll say was, you idiot, you took aspirin. That is what caused the toothache to go away, right? And so, like, maybe I'm asking, is there a line somewhere? Like, I use the things that he furnished in his creation to alleviate my toothache, right? And where people find your faith to be unbelievable is when you attest a result, you know, to the miraculous workings of Jesus Christ when it appears as if it may be just the aspirin has done it. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, is there, I don't know how to say that, because, like, I really like the miraculous workings of Jesus Christ. I think, that, you know what I'm saying? But, like...
Well, it gets annoying when people over-spiritualize things.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, okay, maybe God did that, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
I'm okay being that he did. I'm okay that he didn't. I mean, you know, but then people are like, oh, no, God did that. God did this. God did this, whatever. You're like, maybe.
Yeah.
Or to try to make it miraculous. Maybe he just started the car.
And it seems like their entire life is just this mysticism
that's kind of going on.
And that's the thing. It's like sometimes I think it makes our God sound unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? What, yeah. I mean, he does unbelievable stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of falls in line. Mm-hmm. But, like, people are like, I got a new promotion. Thank God. Well, you know, you did show up to work most days, and you did good work when you were there, and, yeah. I mean, those are...
Yeah, good work ethic, and...
I hear what you're saying.
See, the thing is, I mean, God could have transformed your car into a Lamborghini if he wanted to. I have complete confidence of that. He chose to let it start.
Right.
You know, so... Yeah. You celebrate either one.
I don't fit into a Lamborghini very well.
Well, so but that'd be kind of funny. That's the dangling thing. Yeah. He'd be like, watch goes, this.
Troy, the Italian car is not your choice of a vehicle. You're not going to be able to get out
I'm
of
gonna
that
I'm going to get Buva a really cool car he can't ride, but it'll start.
Buva got a Ferrari Italia he can't fit in. Yeah, buddy. It's like, I don't know if that was a good deal, God.
You know, maybe that's some of that is actually, now that I look at it through some smokescreen here, like, maybe some of that is just my own issue, right? Like, I've discussed
as it is with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've discussed this with people before, like, when something bad has happened, and their reaction to it, they're Christ followers, and their reaction to it is just, they're just devastated, right? They're sad, they're down, they feel like they got not a whole lot to put out, and they're wearing a burden on their back, like,
what will people think of God if I feel this way? Mm-hmm. And like, my number one advice is, like, God don't need you as a PR man. You know what I'm saying? Just follow Jesus. You're fine. And so there's probably a lot of truth to that, that crosses over in the pond. Is like, look, I mean, if God healed your toothache, whiz bang, man, God healed it. Call it what it is. He doesn't need you as a PR man. If you believe that's what happened, rock on.
Well, and we do it on both sides. You know, we also think there's, Satan's around every corner and behind every bush. You know, Satan gave me the cancer. Well, it could be you drink 30 years worth of Diet Coke.
Right. Could be your soda and smokes. But yeah, I mean,
possible.
Who knows?
I don't know. You know, or, but not, that's not, he couldn't do that,
Yeah. And it can be a both and not just an either or situation. It doesn't mean that you have to nail it down to this or this.
Is there such thing as a foolish faith? Like, what's the worst that happens to me? I attribute everything to God and people think I'm a fool. What have I lost, really? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People think I'm a fool. Well.
Yeah. I don't see anything wrong with saying that, hey, God was involved in this, even if it is just a natural process that he set up. You know, he's still sovereign over it. And you know. There's actually one example where Daniel starts praying very intensely for something that God's already promised, which seems kind of foolish. It's like, why are you going to pray for something that God has already promised? And it's very similar to, the world just working the way that God has designed for it to work, and aspirin doing exactly what God has designed aspirin to do. But, sitting down and praying, hey, God, can you make this aspirin do exactly what aspirin's supposed to do? Then take the aspirin tablet and then go ahead and credit God with having made aspirin do, sure,
yeah.
Aspirin's still doing exactly what it does. God designed aspirin to do exactly that, and
it's credible to thank him for the results.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. Yeah. And
I feel like that's actually a truer perspective, than I normally have towards God too. Is like, I feel like I do owe him thanks for the aspirin. He certainly did not have to provide it, and he did not have to think of my well-being for having made it.
Well, and the guy that who doesn't believe in God, who says, hey, man, but the aspirin did the work, I mean, he's the guy that's benefiting from the rain on the just and the unjust alike. He thinks God didn't cause the rain either. So, I mean, to the extent that he doesn't recognize it, doesn't mean it's not true, and doesn't frankly mean that he's got a valid argument. He just, he's taken something that God has done and put it on an earthly deliverer, where we otherwise would say, look what God has done, thanks for the earthly thing.
So when you go back to the doctor and the medication he gave you doesn't work, you say, you know what? Try another one of God's ways. I bet we'll get this done. Pick another one.
You know, I know it's something that if you really want to be skeptical about it and you really want to explain away every miracle under the sun and everything that God can present to you, if you've got enough creativity, sure, you can do it. You can pull it off if you really want to explain away miracles.
A Pharisee's tried that very thing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's an irony to that because creativity is itself a gift from God. But, get enough creativity behind your cynicism and, you can come up with some kind of explanation for all these miracles. That's fine, and continue living in your view of the world. But it's not necessarily a healthier way of living as opposed to someone who just says, you know what, this is from God. I don't see a problem with that. What I really liked about your story, though, Bhuva, was that even just some of those deep things that you're wrestling with were things, just some of those doubts that are living inside of you, and God's dealing with them. And he brought those up. It's not something that you're initiating, and so he's going to end up building a faith that addresses those issues, but it's ultimately from him. He initiated it. He's essentially giving you faith, and here's part of the process to it. But, there were doubts that you never really realized were there or were holding you back, but they were, and yeah, they were holding you back, and God's saying, nope, time to replace those doubts with some faith. And he's giving it to you, and it's not something that you could have just invoked of your own power. So.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
All right, you've stumbled into America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. I'm going to give you a bit of wisdom, a proverb, and you need to tell me whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom or what is a secular bit of wisdom. And if it's a secular item, you need to tell me what country that it comes from. Does everybody understand the rules of the game?
Can I choose both and?
No.
All right.
Either one has a distinct black and white answer.
Mesopotamia is an answer.
No, I'm just saying, can I say it's wisdom from God and from secular society?
No, that's a cop out. No.
All right. Fair enough.
That's an aspirin God provided answer. And otherwise, okay. It really ruins the game, Herrick. That's the deal. Yes, a Grecian man said it, and Jesus, done. Aren't we done here?
Inspired by God.
Okay.
All countries.
Okay, ready? So here's the deal. We got a ton of people. If you're sharing a microphone, you're going to have to alternate dudes. All right? We don't got time to have like 15 people answer the questions around here. All right, ready?
Huh?
Yep, we're good.
All right, secular or Solomon?
What game are we playing, Ben?
Starting with Boova.
All right.
Boova, a dog is wiser than a woman. It does not bark at its master. A dog is wiser than a woman. It does not bark at its master. Secular or Solomon?
I'm going to say secular, and I'm going to go Italy.
The offensive Italians. let's see. Andrew Carson.
Secular as well. And let's go with Haiti.
Hey, perfect. Dave Eric.
Did he say The Hague?
No, he said Haiti.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And then he followed up with a, yeah.
I feel like I'm going to say Solomon, not because I remember a specific verse, but just because I remember one similar to that. So I know he said things like that.
Erickson for Solomon. Dan Hudson.
Okay, I'm going to go secular, and I'm trying to think of who really doesn't like women.
Mike Tyson. Let's hear this.
No, that's not what I'm thinking. That's not what's going to bring out the answer in me here. We're going to go with... I'm going to go with... it's a modern-day Iran.
Modern-day Iran. Mike Gessman.
Solomon. And I think that's Proverbs 6:20.
All right. A dog is wiser than a woman. It does not bark at its master. It is secular Russia.
Dang.
Secular Whoa. Russia.
They're in bed with Iran.
secular versus Solomon. Whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. Secular or Solomon, Andrew?
Solomon, yes.
Do you have a chapter?
No.
Okay.
Do we need a chapter?
No.
Solomon.
Okay, Dan.
I'll admit I was mentally celebrating my win and victory, so I did not realize you were reading a new.
I'm sorry.
I was giving myself
one for Dan's honesty.
Yes,
you said Iran.
What?
You said Iran though?
But I also said secular.
In his own mind, he won.
Exactly. Who is a close ally of Russia right now?
Dan's the guy who celebrates the phrase "the game is over" without checking to see whether he's actually on the winning side.
Yes,
yay! I just assume I'm the victor.
True leader at heart.
Whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. Secular or Solomon?
Asher sounds Solomon-esque. I'm gonna go Solomon.
Dan's in with Solomon. Mike Gessman.
Solomon.
Guessman's in with Solomon and Boova.
Solomon, Proverbs 18.
Whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. It is Solomon, Proverbs 11:29. Hey, man, what does that mean? Whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind. I like to harass my kids. Is that out? Is that out?
From personal experience, I'm going to say yes, that's out.
Oh,
sorry.
Man.
Buddy. You better repent now.
Like, what level of harassment is fine?
You have to ask about.
Let me ask this following question. Doesn't the Bible describe the Holy Spirit as the wind? Is Solomon saying, harass your children and you will receive the Holy Spirit?
I do not believe that is what Solomon is going
for. Is that the right way to read it?
There are many things referred to with the wind.
I'm going to take that one into consideration. Yeah.
James 1 talks about the wind throwing around waves. I don't know if it's always a good thing for the wind.
That means God is sovereign.
Wait,
I know how to interpret the Bible.
I've been known to throw around some windies.
An issue of inheritance, then it's probably the younger generation harassing the older generation.
Those brutes?
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit will come upon me once the kids harass me? All right, secular versus old.
you leave all your stuff to the kid that doesn't harass you.
I won't have anything to leave. I inherited the wind. Here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Dan.
Solomon 12:18.
Ooh, Mike guessing.
Some random
Solomon
numbers
12:19.
Okay.
12:19. Mike's going to plus one. Prize is right answer.
Yep.
Boova.
Solomon, Proverbs 13.
Proverbs 13. Mr. Carson.
Secular with Egypt.
Secular Egypt and Dave Herrick.
Solomon again.
Wait, did you already answer this?
Yeah.
One?
I started this on round.
Do you belittle your
Don't
neighbor?
Ask him.
I might belittle my neighbor. I lack sense. Here we go. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. Solomon, Proverbs 11:12.
Oh, did I say 12:11?
12:18.
Sorry, Dan.
Yes. Work with me.
We all bid it over.
All right, here we go. If you are secular versus Solomon, if you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. Secular or Solomon, Dan?
I'm going to go secular here, and I'm pretty darn sure that's Indonesia.
Indonesians are giving out the scoff. Mike Gessman.
That'll be secular Ireland.
Secular Ireland. John Booba.
Solomon, Proverbs 10.
Proverbs 10. Andrew Carson.
Solomon.
And Dave Herrick.
Solomon as well.
If you are wise, you are wise for yourself, semicolon. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. It is Solomon, Proverbs 9:12. Proverbs 9:12. Better get on that desk calendar, boys. Secular versus Solomon. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Secular or Solomon, Mike Gessman.
Solomon, Proverbs 6:20.
And John Booba.
Solomon, Proverbs 5.
Andrew Carson.
Solomon, Proverbs 2.
Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
And Dan Hudson.
I'm going Proverbs 2, Solomon, about verse 5.
Mike?
Proverbs 6:20.
Mike, do you care to admit your lies?
What do you mean?
My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Solomon, Proverbs 6:20. Tell me. Tell me who loves Proverbs.
Wow.
Hey, he's sitting right behind me.
Thank you.
He can see the list. He's not wise on his own. Secular versus Solomon.
The Lord showed me the answer. Why don't you believe
in miraculous teachings?
Let me get the sixth one right.
Why must you belittle the spiritual nature of my relationship?
Shame on you. I may have looked at it on accident.
Here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Let's see. Society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in. A society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in. Secular or Solomon. Booba.
Secular Japan.
Andrew Carson.
Secular China.
Secular China. Sticking with the Asian countries. Dave Herrick.
Secular India.
We're apparently Dave all Herrick, in for Asia.
Are you questioning whether India is a country?
Are you dying over there? Did you recently plant a tree?
No.
Okay, I'm just making
sure. For a younger generation?
Dying. I'm good.
Okay, just making sure you won't have to work this one out. Dan Hudson.
That is a great old Danish proverb. It's secular.
The Danes are planting trees. Mike Gessman.
Secular. And we're going Brazil.
Yeah. Secular Brazil.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. You guys are like on the Family Feud with the whole family.
good answer.
A society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in, sluggard. And that is, anybody want to change their answer if I add sluggard at the end? No, okay, here we go. Secular Greek.
Yeah.
Greek proverb. Here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Do not blame God for having created the tiger, but thank him for not giving it wings. Do not blame God for having created the tiger, but thank him for not having given it wings. Secular or Solomon? Andrew Carson.
Secular.
Do you always make noises here? Is this just a life choice? Do you always make weird noises before answering a question?
I do.
You're always like, is that like your Winnie the Pooh thinking process?
Yes, it is.
Anyway.
Thank you for noticing.
If you hear Andrew doing that, he's putting the think on something.
Yes.
All right. And, Dave Herrick.
Secular, India again.
Okay. Dan Hudson.
Well, it's secular, but I'm trying to figure out how to define this country. It's like the Land of Oz, which would be related to Kansas, I guess. There's a world
also
there.
Not a country.
Yeah, but there's
also
a rainbow America. Involved.
Like the Maldives?
What's that?
There's a rainbow involved, right?
How about Monte Cristo?
Yeah.
Montenegro? What do they do the game like?
Monte Cristo.
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo.
There were tigers in Oz?
Isn't that a sandwich?
Well, there's a lion.
It's a book.
Oh. Monte Carlo.
Some wings on it.
Count up. You just said Monte Cristo, which is a sandwich.
Lions and tigers.
Just kind of putting it all together. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'll say Indonesia. Did I say Indonesia once?
No.
Somebody just say that.
Someone already said Indonesia, but you, it is still a country, and you can go for it.
Okay, I'll go with that. I'll do that.
Wait, can we say, is there a way to settle this? Did the book or the sandwich start first? Is Monte Cristo...
No, the book definitely started first. However, you just said Monte Cristo, not the Count of. Monte Cristo is just the sandwich.
I'm pretty sure Monte Cristo is an island somewhere.
Yeah, why are you saying it like Cristo?
Monte Carlo is a car.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a country.
Someone said Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo isn't a country.
It's a city.
It's a city in Spain, isn't
What's Montenegro?
To the Google.
An What's island?
And is there a relation to the full Monte?
Hey.
Isn't that the last name of that one of the gals on Bones?
Montenegro.
I don't watch the Bones.
I don't watch Bones either.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Monte Cristo is the same.
Why are you saying it? Like
I'm not hungry though. Did we agree on? Can you get one of these at this time of night?
Monte Cristo?
What? What are you saying? Is
Vinegan?
Stop that.
Listen here. You are not ethnic. You're
Midwestern.
What? John Boover the Third.
Am I saying it weird?
You're the whitest man I know.
It's not an ethnic name.
You're like a Monte Cristo.
I'd like a Monte Cristo, please.
You're like, I would like a sandwich. Could I have a Monte Cristo?
Hi, my name's John Boover, and I'd like a Monte Cristo. No, I'm just. Monte Cristo? Okay. Maybe I am saying it weird, and I just... Hey, man, does that mean the people at the Bennigan's just look at me funny every time I go, hi, I'm white and American and born and raised in Iowa. I'd like the Monte Cristo.
Do you want to go to the Perkins and get a pan of cake?
I have the pasta fagioli.
Secular Solomon.
Hey, man, whose turn is it?
Mike,
I think it's Mike Gessman.
Well, yeah, Mike Gessman, you guys are up. Oh, hold on. Do not blame God for having created the tiger, but thank him for not giving it wings.
Yeah, that's Secular Oman.
What?
All right, I think we made it around here. Do not blame God.
They don't have any tigers in Oman.
Didn't you go?
When's the last time you've been to Oman?
My answer is secular.
4 years ago.
Dang it, Herrick.
Been to Oman.
We have the DNR there. They bring them in.
Do they have any zoos?
They chased them away because they're afraid of tigers. This makes tons of sense.
They
for
have
Oman.
Wings.
They used to be before Herrick.
They go where they want.
Put the whoops on them. Instead of Monte Cristo.
Boova, are you in or what?
Secular South Africa.
All right. Do not blame God for having created the tiger, but thank him for not having given it wings. Secular India.
Yep.
Indonesia.
Oh.
Woo!
No, Dave Herrick nailed it.
Yeah.
He said secular India.
Several people from South Africa have also been to India, so I'm going to call that a win for me, too.
Nope. Hey, that's pervy. Why do you know that?
What? Did you say that's pervy?
Yeah, it's like you're using public Wi-Fi cams to keep an eye on people.
That's creepy, first off.
That's what I'm saying.
Second off, I don't think I have anything technologically advanced enough to do that.
Maybe you should stop praying about the car and more about the camera.
Hey, God, you really need to work on this whole me looking at people on cameras thing.
Yeah,
thanks for the car start, but I really need to work on that, too.
Boova's online dating profile says, you don't know it, but we've already met. I watched you on the Periscope.
Hi, my name's Boova. I already know you.
I saw you on the Ferris wheel.
I saw you at the Coney Island. It was you were enjoying the Monte Cristo on the stick.
Coney Island is an American attraction.
I know it is. But Monte Cristo is probably American too. It's fried ham, turkey, and cheese. There's no way that's not American. Dipped in raspberry glaze. It's American.
Secular or Solomon, love enters a man through his eyes, woman through her ears. Love enters a man's man through his eyes, woman through her ears, secular or Solomon. Dave Herrick.
Let's go with France.
France. Secular France. Dan Hudson.
I was always prepared for France. I could still be France. No, I have to do something different. Okay.
I can't be wrong, too.
What? I don't know what you speak of. I'm going to go with secular, and I'm going to say that it would have to be... I'm completely blank at the moment.
Jamaica's on the table. You could go with Jamaica.
I'll go Greece.
Here's the romantic thing.
Why not?
I would be willing to pay, nearly $500 to get a visual representation of what's going on in Dan's head when he's trying to think of the country.
Let's see.
It was scary.
It's like it's dismissing stereotypes but bringing them in and saying, well,
that's kind of how it goes.
Eskimo's not a country.
I put a puzzle together of Greece once. That was romantic.
The Incas haven't been around for a while.
Here's a guy in a sombrero. Okay, nope. You can go. Here's a guy in a toga. All right, you can go.
Yeah, you can go.
All right.
Yeah, Mike. Toga's love. It worked.
Mike Gessman, love enters a man through his eyes, woman through her ears.
We're going with Spain.
Secular Spain, yeah. John Bova.
Solomon, Ecclesiastes 2.
Ecclesiastes 2, no doubt. Go ahead, Andrew Carson.
Secular with Italy.
Secular Italy. Okay, love enters a man through his eyes, woman through her ears. Secular Poland.
What?
Secular Poland.
The Polish said that?
Hey, they are not a cold people.
Yeah, apparently.
They're warm and loving.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know I have confirmed that Angela Montenegro is a character in Bones. Damn just it. Heads up.
Hey, how do you know that?
Somebody texted me and said, hey, just to let you know, Angela Montenegro is
Bones
a character
is a good
in Bones.
Show. You guys should watch
it. I'm trying to make sure Boo's not Googling stuff.
No, I'm not. I got a text message, which is just as bad.
Hey, is that, this webcam. Hey, is that true, though? Love,
there she goes.
Love enters a man through his eyes, woman through her ears?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, man, the Polish said it.
I feel like
it has to be right.
Hey, man, is Helen Keller Polish? Because I feel like that's offensive, dude.
Be careful you with your next step.
Scratch that.
You're in real Dan territory here.
Let me tell you, you don't want to go there.
Where's the band? Watch where you're stepping. Watch where
you're in deep water now.
Correct. Sorry, repent. Secular versus Solomon.
I feel like Mike Gessman won. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. All right, so here we go. A wise son makes
it's not over yet.
No, we're not done. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Secular or Solomon, Dan?
Proverbs 8, Solomon.
Proverbs 8, Mike Gessman.
Is he trying to say that the dad doesn't care if the kid's a fool?
Proverbs.
I think it's more that even mom can't bear it if you're a fool.
You're saying like a mom loves her son unconditionally, except now you've just,
unless you're a fool,
your foolish behavior.
And the dad's absent; he's out working anyway.
Yeah,
care.
Yeah.
You're like a Monte Cristo to my palate.
Monte Cristo. Solomon, Proverbs 3.
Andrew Carson.
I remember reading this one. It's Solomon, and I'm pretty sure it's in 10.
Proverbs 10 from Andrew Carson.
Solomon, Proverbs X somewhere as a variable.
Sol 4.
Solid. Yeah. Solid. Dan. Wait, did you start?
Yes.
Proverbs 8.
Okay, you're in Proverbs. Okay, here we go.
Proverbs.
I can't keep track of this many people.
Hey, Proverbs
Solid.
3.
A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. It is indeed Proverbs 10:1. Hey, Andrew and I got it.
2 points.
Andrew Carson has nailed it to the door of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Secular or Solomon, visit your aunt, but not every day of the year. Visit your aunt, but not every day of
Sounds
the year.
Like
Secular or Solomon, Mike Gessman.
Can you come back to us?
What? I'm sorry. If you request pass in history.
He said we're not ready.
Wasn't that on a Dear Life from the Path at one point?
Can I take a pass? I'm not prepared for Secular Solomon. You know what? Granted. John Bova.
Hey, man. Pass? Secular. I'm going to go Guatemala. Where they have the Monte Cristo.
Why wouldn't you? Andrew Carson.
That is secular and B4.
Sorry, America. What?
Was that a battleship?
Yes, it was a battleship reference, and America sounds like a great place.
I've lost control of the room. Dave Herrick, visit your aunt, but not every day of the year.
Secular Germany.
The cold Germans. Dan Hudson.
They're by the Polish.
It is secular, and...
Oh, buddy.
What? Who's cold to their relations? See, Canadians.
It's a Switzerland thing. We're going Switzerland.
Interesting. Mike Gessman. I'm sorry. Do you need more time?
We can go around the room again if you want us to.
We've discussed it. We're going Norway.
Yeah.
Norway. Visit your aunt, but not every day of the year. Secular Spain.
Boom. Ooh.
Spain.
What was the boom for?
Huh?
That's the sound. That's the sound of being wrong. Is in Norway.
I just like. I like to celebrate Boom. Me and Gessman's friendship. What's it to you?
God did that.
We're about to part ways. I'm sure of it.
Hold on. Yeah, you know what? We're done. That's it. That's it for Secular versus Solomon. You've been listening, taking part in America's Not quite fastest growing internet game show. We've been elapsed by some sort of YouTube sensation.
It's up there.
Regardless, it's certainly trending. So you can catch more Secular versus Solomon by going to the website livefromthepath.org and just Google or put Secular versus Solomon in the search bar, and you can partake in such other previous quizzes involving different guests that have been on the show. Also, some other quizzes, including can you determine the false prophecies of the end of the world and things heard on Christian radio to raise money, and all good times. Check out the games at livefromthepath.org. All right. So I was reading earlier today. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day today. And I've been reading a couple books, and it was weird how these two things kind of melded together. So I'm going to see if I still have this around here. I'm going to read you a couple quotes, one from each of the books. And I don't know, like, why these two things are sitting together on the action, how the church reacts to circumstances. So here's one. This is from what was it? Tortured for Christ. It's by the guy that founded Voice of the Martyrs. And here's one of the things he wrote. It was in the time of communism. He'd been treated outrageously poor, and so were a lot of the pastors and people following Christ in that time. And this was just part of the book that he wrote. And he said, "In the depth of my heart, I would like to keep the beauty of my own vineyard and not be involved in such a huge fight. I would like so much to be somewhere in quietness and rest, but it is not possible. When the communists invaded Tibet, they put an end to those who were interested only in completely spiritual matters. In our country, they put an end to the all who removed themselves from reality. Churches and monasteries were dissolved, keeping only as much as was necessary to dupe foreigners." Okay, so his reaction, he's talking about the way he worded it was called a pure. People were telling him to preach a pure gospel. Basically, don't involve these outside circumstances. Just preach a pure gospel, and then I'll listen to it. But I don't want to hear about the communists. I don't want to hear about all these circumstances that are coming up in the world. And then I was reading earlier today Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham jail, and this is one of the things that he wrote in there. It said, "Actually, time itself is neutral. It can be used either destructively or constructively. More and more, I feel that the people of ill will have used time much more effectively than have the people of goodwill. We will have to repent in this generation not merely for the hateful words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people. Human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts of men willing to be co-workers with God, and without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the forces of social stagnation. We must use time creatively, in the knowledge that the time is always ripe to do right." And so, the reason this has kind of been sitting in my mind is we've had a lot of conversations, I think, trying to figure out, in what ways do you engage in things within the culture? In what times are you basically fighting the wind? I know protesting comes up a lot, right? Like people standing outside businesses with signs and things. But then there's a risk, and this is maybe what this is bringing to me, is there's a risk that you have simply backed off too much. And you said, I'm just going to hold tight in my little corner, and as long as I preach Christ crucified, these things will work themselves out. But the truth is that, like, any effort that goes into simply dismissing the impacts of the lack of Christ within a society is ripe for the light of Christ. And so I think maybe it pulls me back from a peripheral that says I can be agnostic to the society that surrounds me. Because I think that's simply not true, and I think it through guys like Martin Luther King, and the founder of the Voice of the Martyrs guy, like they felt once it is the gospel that permeates those circumstances and helps them to change, and it simply can't sit on the exterior of that. And so we this actually came up in the concept of when we were talking about Daniel earlier tonight too, is trying to understand all of that, like how does that come together with how we engage in a culture. To what extent are we actually fighting political battles? To what extent are we engaging in the discussions of the day, or sitting beyond it or above it, or not getting involved in things? That's just where the culture is. Because that's been the other thing is we're like, to what extent do I fight to have laws changed to try to get the culture to change when laws are simply a reflection of where the culture is at without Christ? And so what I thought it does, is brought to a finer point the risk of saying, I simply won't engage at all. Because I think both the Voice of the Martyrs writer and Martin Luther King are correct here, is that we have to repent for the silence of the good people, of basically standing in silence as things go on, as if that is not the playing fields of which God acts. God has always been on that, or acting in part of that stage, right? He's involved in governmental things. He's involved in the moving and the changing of nations and in the setting of kings and the putting away of kings. And so I think we can't bail completely. So it brought to me the question then, is it, so how do you engage it rightly? And Mike, wouldn't you agree, like, isn't that the crux of a lot of the questions where we say, like, you see something happen in the culture and you're like, so how do we engage this then? Do we jump in, or is this a petty fight between a culture that doesn't love Christ and they just need to know Jesus?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of what we've been asking, right?
Yeah, and I think sometimes we are we don't want to have them ask the right questions. We're just going to wait until the right question is asked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like especially around caucus time in Iowa is a pretty big deal, and that's coming right up for us. And I was actually thinking about that while you were talking, because I feel a lot that way about most of our political situations. And most of my cop out, and if you can call it a cop out, is look at, they're not even interested in having the same conversations that Martin Luther King is talking about, or the Voice of the Martyrs guy, right? Like, they're interested in having way different conversations about things that really, I mean, they have very little impact. They make them sound like they do, but like the things that these guys are striving for, that's done on the street level, and that's done in the conversations that you have with your community around you, and it will work its way up to where they can't ignore your questions anymore. But I think the reason that most Christians, you know, back away from, maybe most Christians don't back out of the political process. Maybe it's just me and the people I know. But like, they look at it and go, look, these guys aren't even talking about anything. They're talking about absolutely nothing. They're trying to promote a pagan culture that's walking away from God. Why would I want to even be part of this wheel? You know, but like, you can engage in these conversations on the street level very much like Martin Luther King did. And it gets pushed up there. And so I think the question is like, we're bailing out because they're not asking the right questions, and we're not even posing questions to combat it.
Yeah, and that was part of what was in my mind, is I thought, like, would I not have been willing to walk with Martin Luther King simply because I said this is ineffectual? This doesn't do anything. Like, as much as I think protests are a waste, but here's where I think all this stuff comes together, and it's interesting that it comes together well under the stuff that we were talking about with Daniel. Is Daniel basically does what he does and continues to do those things wherever God does it. So if it happens to be that what Daniel is doing, the faith that he has, the belief in God that he has, and his faithfulness to God, if that happens to run into a political machine, so be it. Like, that is not his concern. Whether it does or does not is irrelevant to the fact that he's simply faithful in the means, right? And that comes back to one of our broad principles here on the show, is that you're simply being faithful in the means. And so what that does not call me to do is say, I will stay out of a political arena. Like, I put no special effort into staying out of those conversations or not being part of the discussions that people are having. I simply go about what God has me doing, and if that takes me into that arena, so be it. And if it does not, fine. Right, it's simply being faithful in those things. Where otherwise, my inclination is probably to say that is not a positive arena. Good things don't happen there. And so, like, is it possible that if I'm 60 years ago and I see Martin Luther King saying the things that he says and writing the things that he writes, and I say yes, but the things that you're doing, I feel like just don't, they're not going to matter. Protests don't really matter. Sit-ins don't matter. This isn't how things actually change. And so I stay out of that arena when actually they do matter. They do matter and have done something. And so, is there a difference for me between, you know, standing outside of Disney World and boycotting because you don't, I don't know, they make a movie with a gay guy in it or something and you hate that, compared to doing a nonviolent protest for rights or an understanding of human value that God guarantees? Yes, I think there is very much a distinction there. And so I don't know that I'm backing off completely on the, I think your protests are worthless. But like, I think it just brought to my mind that inaction is not acceptable here. It is just, how do we pursue things in the manner of which God has them to be pursued? And then I'm simply not going to argue with God about the forum of which it is done. And to make sure that regardless of how pure the gospel is and how much you preach Christ crucified, that has a physical reality. Right. The truth is that the gospel, as good news, has a physical, tangible, earthly reality of which we are then part of the process of bringing it to fruition. And it is a mistake to act like you can hang back and you can't touch the culture and then expect the culture to shift. But it is also very cool to watch how God will change things in ways that you otherwise had not anticipated. So that's part of what's been on my mind. And then it also got me thinking, I have a false sense of security in where I live and how I live. Because I look at how near great evils are. The evil, and I would really recommend, I'm generally put off, I would say. I've probably seen the title of this book before and then never read it. It's called Tortured for Christ. And I probably just looked at it and thought, I think I know what this will be about. But frankly, it's very compelling to read through this guy's experiences under communism and how it treated Christianity and kind of the posturing of the communists on the other side of. But ignore the political aspects, but like what they purported to be relative to what people look for in God is especially heinous. And so like we kind of cut that off. It's just, well, look, we don't agree with the political program. It's the extent of that is much bigger. But in either case, I think what it reminded me is that I have a false sense of security of where I'm at in not recognizing the extent of evil in the world. And I feel like we don't like to talk about that. But the truth is like we're not that many years departed from a communism that killed and tortured Christians. We're not that many years departed from Nazi Germany. We are in the middle of an ISIS who targets Christians and for the things they believe. And I want to believe in the as a human, I probably want to believe in the inherent good of people as a person who has the reality of scripture at my hands. I know that is not true of people. People are not that way. And the truth is that the more I am blind to the evil that exists, the more likely I am to not do anything to spread light to where evil is. And some of the stories from that book, just look at how people who have no hope and who are in darkness, how readily they turn and accept Christ. One of the things he said is there are no lukewarm Christians in Russian prisons, right? Like with the way that they receive Jesus. And we're fighting, like when people don't know when they're saved and people don't have any ideas to whether am I actually following Christ? Am I actually listening to Christ? And like, these are stupid problems that people have because we're reacting in a very pale time because we are not faced with the physical realities that other people and other places are faced with. And I kind of need – that is a great deceit. That is a great deceit upon us as believers in a Western culture, in America specifically, but any places where money is a blinder, that causes us not to realize those things. And I think the combination of lack of understanding the depths of evil that surround us in the world and my inaction or understanding the price of my inaction, and if you combine those two things, like we are lulled into complacence without recognizing that the world is still dying without the light of Christ. And so just a couple things that were sitting on my mind, and I think there's more places for that to go with what that means for me physically, a physical reality of how I engage with the world. But it is one of the benefits of making sure that you are hearing voices of people that love Jesus from a perspective that is different from your own. I won't be able to live a life of a black man in the United States, even now. Like, I simply don't have that perspective. So here's the thing is I probably need to start trusting Christians that are black men that are living in this country, and they say something's up, then I have to say, okay, I think something's up, right? I have to be able to submit to other people following Jesus and their perspective and say, what am I missing in how I understand these things? What is the Coptic Christian writing about his experience? What are they seeing under ISIS? What are those people who are still under some sort of oppression for their beliefs, and how do they pray? How do they worship? And how are they describing their experience? And can I see where darkness is so that I can react appropriately? And so I am not part of the silence of the passive Christian who simply is blind to the darkness that continues to exist in the world. So anyway, here's the thing is that I really recommend is both of those are good perspectives to soak in. If you haven't ever read the full letter from Birmingham Jail from Martin Luther King, I would certainly recommend doing that. I've read it kind of annually on the day just to remind myself of people that are in situations that I'm not in have perspectives that shake maybe what's become complacent in my own life. And then also Tortured for Christ, and it, just search for that. It'll come up. But again, a reminder of what it looks like to be under oppressive evil, and the stories of light and redemption and people converting and becoming Christians in the most dire of circumstances, and frankly, the oppressors becoming those who also become those that are captive, and turn to Jesus by the witness of Christians. And this actually comes back to some of the stuff that we talked about earlier today, which is that our words, and we fight primarily with words in our culture, in our circumstances, we fight with words. Our actions are far less heavy, but it is in those. Every other circumstance, and this is in Daniel's circumstance, this is in the Christians fighting under oppression, it is their actions that they are primarily fighting with, and then their words provide distinction as to what those actions are for, or who they point to, or what they're about. And which ties kind of think all this together is, if we are merely a people, Christians of words, and there's no physical reality to what is good news, then it is a false news, and frankly, it's not believable. We are as hypocritical as any other thought process that doesn't bear out the truth of which it professes. And so I think we need to be careful of making sure that we don't get lulled into this sense of inaction, that we miss the good news as it actually permeates through culture. So anyway, sorry, I know that was kind of a long rambling thing, but I was trying to put to a point all the stuff that's been floating around in my mind after kind of soaking some of that stuff in and reading through Daniel and kind of trying to figure out what does that actually mean for how we have to react to those things. And I think it's a hard word, especially because we're starting from a place of not understanding. Like, I have to admit that I actually don't know. I don't have a full perspective, and that I'm in potentially a circumstance that deceives me as to what reality is. Because my own reality is not the one that's shared by everybody. And I think that's hard. I think that's hard for me to understand that and to have to fight to understand that correctly, and then see in what ways I take that to engage in the culture that does surround me, but also positively benefit the cultures that do.
So here's a question then. What's some take home for folks at home? I mean, we're called to be carriers of the gospel. And in both of these situations, you've got Martin Luther King and you've got Richard Wurmbrand. And they were actually pastors. And they believed that because of the gospel that they carry, they are also called to some type of political action. How do you recognize when the political issue on the table is one that you need to actually engage in, and as opposed to, hey, this is just, you know, one of those little Disneyland boycott type deals. How do you know the difference? When do you think you need to actually engage and spend your time and investment in this, and potentially end up being known based on this instead of simply just going, hey, here's the gospel message? What's kind of the tipping point for that for you?
I think it is where the political process of wherever you're at starts attempting to speak on something that Jesus has otherwise spoken on, right? Like, one of the things, and I don't know how to engage in this issue well, because I think I would generally say that I don't know that we have engaged in it well, but certainly abortion is something where, like, you've moved into calling devaluing something that God values. Mm-hmm. Right, and so there is something where the political process has intersected with the good news of Christ. Like, it is not, we are not seeking out trouble. Disagreement has sought us out. Right, has sought out something where God speaks, and we simply, there's not an argument as to whether we have to engage on something. Life that God says is creating in His image is being devalued in a society, and I simply think we do not have a right to not engage on that issue. Whereas sometimes a culture is attempting to provide is voting or pointing directions on things that they value, that either God is agnostic about, or that God is, He has other means of redemption. Like, so it is not through the laws of a given state of which redemption is found, that what the state is offering simply doesn't play in the same field as which God does. And so the termination of people killing other people, yes, that seems to play on something that God would otherwise insist to stop. But maybe that's where it is. I don't know. I think I struggle with how far or what iterations out from the things that God values can I expect to engage in on a political level. Because the truth is that, like, in God's polis, in God's politic, it simply looks like nothing on earth, because He is the King, right? And so no political structure actually works that way. And so I don't have any, I can't expect that those two things will match up. That is part of His redemption, is that someday it will, and His politic will reign. So I think I probably struggle there, but I think there are certain issues of which God is very clear, and to the extent that, that question is also black and white as part of the political process, then we engage in it simply not because we went looking for it, but because we believe in it, and the good news permeates to that level of the conversation regardless.
Hudson, you've kind of danced in this landscape as well a little bit. You've been very active politically at times in terms of based on your faith, and at other times you've kind of backed off from different political processes and rather focused instead more on I don't know what you would maybe call more traditional ministry approaches. What has that been like? Just what have been some of the motivations there and going on?
For me, really, I had to struggle, and I continually struggle with, am I trying to force someone to act like a Jesus person, or am I representing Jesus in the culture? You know, because what value is it to force people to act like how Jesus said to act if they're not following Jesus? Ultimately, for their soul, it doesn't change anything. It's just forcing them to act differently, and that. You know, if that is the root of my action, then that's a wrong motive. That's when I'll kind of back off. And at times, I have. Actually, just last week, I rejoined a political party so that I could go into the caucuses coming up, because I thought it's actually important. This is a representative government, you know, and I keep saying no one represents me. Well, that's because so many of us are silent. They don't have to, you know, and so I'm still. Figure out. So, what is the line that you cross? You know, they devalue life. Well, that's a God issue. They devalue marriage. That's actually a God issue. But I don't know. The answer is to, you know, well, I'm going to force you to value marriage the way I value it, or the way God values it. Who cares about me? I'm going to take myself out of it, right? Because if there's still, whether there's marriage or not, that's just a pretend issue. The action's going on anyway. You know, same-sex couples and everything. So whether you call them married or not, that's just a game. I'm not answering your question, but because I really have struggled. I go back and forth every few years, kind of. So I'm kind of re-engaging at least enough, long enough to be involved in the caucuses. I don't know after that. I mean, I've been at the Capitol building and kicked out at a protest before, and that was over, there was multiple issues, but I think that the evening was on taxes, you know, and it's like, well, there was quite a crowd there, and it was more over the issue of one of the parties was incorrectly using their authority. That was really the issue. To happen. Taxes was the topic, and it caused quite a ruckus, and they didn't like people observing what they were doing, so they kicked the whole crowd out. Then, like, singled me out, you know, type of thing. I don't know if I would do that.
Actually, that's almost a perfect example, because I was trying to think of, like, is it possible that, like, the things that you fight for are the education of who God is and how He values His kids, right? Because, like, That marriage deal, that's in there. Like your sexual orientation is in there.
Right, right.
Of how he feels about you. Now the way that the government taxes, it's not really in there.
Yeah, surprisingly, that was a hot button issue for Jesus' day. And when they brought it to Jesus, he's like, "Yeah, just give it back to Caesar. Let him have it.
Fishes have it. Just no big deal." You know what I'm saying? And so, not to say whether that's right or wrong, but like, is it possible that, like, if you look at the things that these guys are fighting for, you know, they're fighting for. Martin Luther King was fighting for, you know, the way that African Americans were treated in this country, and God has more value on them than that, than how we were treating them and how they were being treated. Right. Same thing goes true for babies. Same thing goes true for aborted fetuses. Like all these things are God's perspective and God's perspective on humanity. And like, yeah, maybe we are cowardly backing out. You know what I'm saying? Maybe we're not fighting for those things. And like, those are very important things, because they are the two big doors at the front of the gospel. You know what I'm saying? I mean, why would you even care about the good news if you didn't know who God was or how He values you? Then the whole Bible, I mean, it doesn't matter to you then. Mm-hmm. But if you know those things, then that Bible becomes very interesting to you. I want to know why He is this and who I'm dealing with and why He feels this way about me. Like, this is all very good stuff and effective to my life. But you're right. Maybe taxes or zoning issues. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But if you really come from a perspective of conception and life beginning at conception, and you're coming from a perspective of they're killing children, right? How do you just sit back and say, well, you know, who am I to say? You know, if that baby was an hour old and they started killing them, then all of a sudden we're pretty angry. I can't believe you did that, you know.
But see, that's the thing, is our idea is to protest the government.
Yeah.
Our idea is not to get to know the woman and the child and the heartbreak and the situations that created that. We just go straight to the top to the 60-year-old white guys that don't know crap about it and like to grandstand, right? That is not the right move. The right, maybe protest ain't even the right move.
Or both is kind
of, maybe there's, you know, a mixture of both, right? But like, right, you're not fighting on the level to affect those people that this sin is affecting so poorly. You're trying to, when we try to legislate that sin, that's foolish. That's not the best way to do it, right? Well, Mike said maybe there is places for that. You know, like the government saying,
you know, they decide they're going to start killing first graders. You know, what's the difference? You know, it's like, are you going to go fight for that? Are you going to say, well, no, we don't want to change the laws?
Sure.
Like, no, actually, that's a big deal.
No, and maybe that's the thing is where we get off course is focusing all of our energy as if the sovereignty of a government has more influence than the actual sovereignty of God or the influence of people with good news, right? So it is, even if you want to boil it down to a practical matter, who is most likely to, if we think the root of a particular social circumstance is sin, frankly, most of it is, right? If that's what we believe to be the case, how much effort have we put into talking to people about Christ, sharing the good news, helping them rethink their circumstance in the light of who God is and who they are and his forgiveness and love, and how much energy we put on to asking the social governmental structure of the day to try to influence it. Like, it's really more of a poor practicality. We've thought through this thing incorrectly where we said the quickest and most efficient way to get something done is to influence the government to make a law, and then that will change people's behavior. And the truth is, like, there may be instances when that is true, and I don't know that it's inappropriate way of doing it, but if you got 100,000 people and 90,000 are lobbying the government and 10,000 are beating the streets to talk to people about Jesus, we've simply backed the wrong horse for the actual potential to change the reality and the influence of how people behave. Like, yeah, that's really the issue. Is writing it off completely is probably is a fallible thought, but it simply is not the most effective means of which to alter what people think and how they behave. And we've got an imbalance, a significant one, in the resources that we spend to try to influence government versus trying to help people know God.
Well, if we're making disciples, then disciples will have Jesus values, and then they will in turn vote in people that have Jesus values. So that's where really our focus should be and the effort should be. Not that we should be silent in the political world or out of it, but involved with people's lives, discipling them, teaching them how to live Jesus' lives, kingdom people, and then it changes culture, and the laws are irrelevant. You know, if the law right now is
if, well, there was, I mean, no demand for abortion, then there would be no clinics for
right.
it.
So. I mean, exactly. We did the same thing when the church ceded social welfare off our backs, right? When caring for widows and orphans was our deal, and then we slowly said, you know, We should probably let the government handle this, right? We're generally doing the same thing with morality now, where we have ceded the widows and orphans to the world. Now we're ceding morality to the world, and and the consequences are obvious, right? Like, they show themselves up.
I did notice one kind of consistent thing for all three of you guys as you were talking about getting involved was each of the issues that you would bring up, you would always connect it back to God in some way, in terms of, hey, here's how the sanctity of life is—it's a very much a God issue. It's something that reveals something about who God is and how He cares for people. And I think that really needs to be the driving heart of whatever the issue is making sure that obviously God's got to be the first priority and not the policy or the issue or whatever it is, that it's something that comes from God, not that, hey, this is, that this is something so great that, you know, I forget about God and He's on the sidelines. But no, it's got to glorify God in some way. It's got to reveal something about who God is. So in a sense, you're kind of fighting for truth in whatever it is that you're fighting for.
Yeah. You've been listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night to the wee hours this time. There's big discussions going on today, Ben.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's heavy town. We got some time for just a few advice, Mike?
You got time for one.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Dear Life from the Path. Dan, cover yours for a minute, Dan. My girlfriend and I live together. We adopted a cat off the street. A few months later, the cat became pregnant and had four kittens. We ended up keeping two, and now we have three cats in a one-bedroom apartment. I've tried being okay with it, but it's making me stressed and unhappy. The litter box must be constantly cleaned. They get into our food and pee on our furniture. Man, you should just have children. I've tried talking to my girlfriend about putting one or two of them up for adoption, but every time I raise the issue, she gets mad and dares me to get rid of them. I don't want her to resent me, but I also don't like living in these circumstances. Please help. Surrounded by cats.
Move out. You shouldn't be there in the first place.
What the heck?
Troy, you sound an awful lot like Dan right there.
Good job. That's right.
Good job. We need a Dan.
Move out. You shouldn't be living with your girlfriend in the first place. Guess what? You get rid of the fact that you're living with your girlfriend, and you don't have to live with cats anymore. Woohoo!
Well, that's true. Two for one.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you.
Let her keep the furniture.
I don't.
It smells bad anyway.
Let's try this out. Let's just for the sake of discussion, let's assume they're married. Now, how do you resolve his problems?
Oh, throw out the cats.
Done. Eric says just outski the animals.
Get rid of the cats.
Goodbye, cats.
And a fruit.
Hey, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
That's terrifying. That's saying.
Yeah, that's really gross.
Hey, man, your wife loves these cats. You're going to kill them off? Throw them out?
Hey, you can't help it if you put antifreeze on the floor and the cats drink it.
Yes, you can. You put antifreeze on the floor.
Look, boys, this has very personal consequences for me. Now, your wife loves animals. You just say, yeah, no problem. And then you have lots of animals.
I think, Mike, you're the one with the wife who loves animals. On
anonymously this call the Department of Health and have them come inspect the house.
Okay.
Dan, get a bigger house, kill the cats, or call the Department of Health.
Well, that way it's not bothering you. You said you're trying to keep the relationship healthy.
I mean,
how would you, Mike, have a conversation, you had to connect it to love
somehow, didn't you?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I love my wife and my kids, and that is why we have as many animals and why I take over the winter shift of feeding animals when it's cold and nasty outside.
Yeah.
And sometimes I forget these lessons, but most days I remember I do this because I love these ladies, and it brings them joy for these animals to be here.
Hey, man, am I not loving my lady if I don't want the cats?
I mean, unless you're deathly allergic to cats, you know, I'd offer to clean the litter box.
Just kind of deal with it.
If the litter box is the problem, clean the litter box.
Deal with it for the lady.
I think it's kind of fair to not have the cats peeing on your stuff, though.
Well, you got to train them not to.
Is that because they're not keeping the litter box clean, or is that just because
they pee on... Most likely, cats like the litter box.
That's
what
I thought, yeah.
They're a modest animal.
I know a family, the cats just go outside. Like, they go outside, then come back in just like dogs. It's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm kind of with... you're right.
I think I'm kind of with Mike. I think you're
all right, fine.
You take care of the animals.
Mike says, love on your wife and children.
Where was your good conversation advice when you were antifreezing them, Dan?
Well, I was just being dorky. I mean, a true relationship, you're to submit to one another out of reverence to Christ.
Love bears all things. This is part of it.
It'd be kind of nice if both of you submitted a little bit.
Yeah.
There's got to be a little...
They agreed on one.
Someone's taking advantage of the Jesus in the relationship.
No,
we're going to have three cats.
Go out on the town, and it did some stuff it shouldn't have, and it came back with more cats.
So now the husband's got to deal with the consequences of the bad choices of the cat?
Yeah.
They're just watching the boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, bad choices of the cat?
Yeah, the cat made a bad choice.
Because the cat was out catting around. That's
the cat was out and had premarital sex and got pregnant out of wedlock. And,
see?
It's just broken homes after
Here's
that.
Here's the deal. We are not qualified to speak on the moral implications of promiscuous cats.
I feel as though I should.
Is there a neighbor on the other side looking through the window while the cat's being fed?
I don't know what to do with it.
Are the cats paying attention to a man that's recently become fit?
He's going on a jog, or I can't remember how the details of that one a few weeks ago.
Was there a neighbor that recently became more fit than the boyfriend, and the cats are paying more attention to that guy than the boyfriend, and that's why this is causing an issue?
Yeah, okay, here's the deal. You're gonna keep the cats, friend.
Yeah.
Just offer... If the litter box is the problem, clean the litter box. You know what I'm saying? This harkens back to Herrick's approach of don't let someone be a jerk. Take the jerkiness off their plate so they don't have to eat it.
Take it on with a joyful heart.
If them not cleaning the litter box is the problem, you clean the litter box. Now you're Your girlfriend's happy. She gets three cats. You don't get pee on your couch. Everybody's happy. You know what I'm saying? Take you 2 minutes. Just get it done. And that's the way to live.
If they're married, I'd say you're right.
Yeah.
Since they're not, I'd say, dude, move on.
Yeah. Now, if it gets up to six or seven cats, listen, man.
She'll be a cat lady.
You have to put your foot down somewhere.
My girlfriend has 11 cats. I'm supposed to love her.
Yeah. You say, I love you. I don't love 11 cats. Well, I love two cats.
Loving cats might be a symptom of a deeper problem, so that might need to be addressed.
Yeah, a psychosis of some kind.
Crazy cat lady is itis.
Yeah.
Okay.
But three cats is okay.
Secular says, you and your girlfriend appear to be irresponsible pet owners.
Absolutely.
I hope you realize that if the stray cat you adopted had been spayed, this could have been avoided.
Yeah, get him.
The litter box should be cleaned regularly, and because the cats belong to both of you, the responsibility should be shared. If the cats urinate on the furniture, it should be discussed with a veterinarian rather than disposing of them. That what? Said, you are not married to this woman. If you are not happy under the current conditions, perhaps it's time to consider moving.
Yeah, that's how you build lasting relationships. You find the one caveat, a thing that you don't like about them, you say, you know what, I'm out. That's a good way to not be joyful the rest of your life. I mean, you get 30 of those in a row, you might want to consider your compatibility. But, like, every once in a while, you and your lady don't agree, that's called living. And you're just going to have to get used to that.
Yeah, but this is a different level. This is like you walk in and your place continually just smells like urine and poop.
Because you're lazy and you don't clean the litter box.
Yeah. But even if you, but they're peeing on the couch.
Because you don't clean the litter box.
I don't know. I really don't know.
No, you do not know, Dan. I'm telling you, you walk in, you say, no one cleans around here, and then you go sit on the lazy boy. That is what you're proposing.
I don't see the problem with that.
Just fit all the cats with the catheter.
Oh, man.
You guys are very helpful.
That was a good idea.
How about the backyard? Yeah, just leave them out there. And
I tried to end the show before the Life from the Path.
We gotta get out of here. You've been listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate you hanging out with us on the show. If you have any questions or comments, concerns about the show, send us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. We check that thing at least once a month, so we'll get around to that stuff, unless it's good news, and then I check that daily. So please put good news in the subject line so I know what it's about. You can also check out the website, sign up for the podcast, livefromthepath.org. Check out past clips from the show, full episodes if you got some time to kill. And you can sign up with that audio podcast, and it is all exclusive content because we are not wanted anywhere else. So we appreciate you hanging out. And before we see you next week, please be faithful in the means. God will take care of the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.